Get ready. You are going to love this show. Gregory Gadson stopped by. He's an American actor, motivational speaker, and a retired colonel in the United States Army. He is also a bilateral above-the-knee amputee. He served in the U.S. Army for more than 20 years as a field artillery officer and served in many active duty overseas assignments. He's a graduate from West Point, where he played football his entire 4 years. He also has 2 master's degrees, one from Georgetown University. And last but not least, he made his acting debut in Battleship, a 2012 American science fiction naval war film, where he played a war veteran who regains his appetite for the fight when aliens threaten to take over the world. You do not want to miss this motivational and inspirational show with Gregory Gadson, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here, host and creator of the top-ranked CJ Evolution podcast. Thank you for being with me today. I hope you all are well. I am well. Again, going through some tough times, but I will persevere. I will make it through because of you, the listener and supporters that give me strength. Big shout out to the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Remember this, in these trying times, these unprecedented times, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Keep up the fantastic work. Are you in charge of your extra duty program for your organization? I know how taxing that can be, especially when you have other projects and assignments going on. I want to tell you about Extra Duty Solutions. This company is amazing. They can help you with client invoicing, problem resolution. They want to help you with your extra duty program. Go to extradutysolutions.com and check them out and tell them Patrick from CJ Evolution sent you. Do you need some kick-ass gym apparel? Or just apparel that you want to wear that supports our brave men and women in law enforcement, check out The Badge Life. Tank tops, gym gear, hoodies, they have it all. The link is going to be in the show notes. You will not be disappointed. This company was created for you, the law enforcement professional, by an active duty law enforcement professional. Again, The Badge Life, you will not be disappointed. Check out the link in the show notes. On to this amazing show with Gregory Gadson. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am so excited to have my next guest on the show. Very, very popular retired Colonel Greg Gadson, a decorated Army veteran, and he's on the show right now. Welcome, sir. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you, Pat. It's great to be here, and I appreciate what you're doing, and it's an honor to be here this evening.
Well, I appreciate it, sir. And thank you so much for taking time. Now, I always ask, you know, law enforcement, you know, military, when they come on to the show, a certain question I'm going to ask you, the same question I ask all of them. Why did you decide to serve your country? Was there a catalyst? Did you have military in your background, in the blood? Why was it? What was the reason?
Well, I'd say there was a significant catalyst for me, but one that you're probably not expected. I was recruited to play football at West Point.
I did know that.
You know, and I, you know, I, like many high school players, I had dreams and aspirations of playing at the professional level. Unfortunately, those opportunities were not availing themselves, at least through the top level of football. And I really had my heart set on playing at college football at the highest level. Mm-hmm. And so that only opportunity for me was United States Military Academy at West Point. And so, you know, ultimately I knew that I was giving up my dream to play professional football. But, and so I probably went there with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder because I wanted to prove that I could play at the highest level. So that's why I went there. Didn't plan to make the military career. My motto or saying was five and fly. That was to pay back my 5-year service obligation for going to the academy and then get out and then get back into football. But I fell in love with being a soldier at the place we were just talking about, the 82nd Airborne Division. Ooh. And didn't quite decide to make it a career, but decided to kind of take it 1 year at a time and keep soldiering.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your service, sir. Everybody appreciates it. Now, West Point, man. I mean, that is it still? Because I know I'm in Colorado in the Air Force Academy. My son got nominated to go to the Air Force Academy, and he didn't get in, unfortunately. But it's still like a congressional kind of nomination, right? I mean,
yeah, absolutely.
Yep. I mean, you got to be a smart cookie to get into West Point or any of the Annapolis.
I'm proof that they do make some mistakes every once in a while. But no, I did get a nomination from my hometown congressman, Norman Sisitsky. It's funny the names you can remember.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, yep.
So really quick, just with West Point again, Greg. So, I mean, what is a typical day? I mean, I know it's tough. I know, you know, I hear it from, you know, a lot of people that went to, I have a lot of friends that went to the Air Force Academy, and I know you're talking about the Army, but it's the same. It's a lot of, you know, discipline. It's, you know, that's drilled home to you. It's a lot of, you know, command structure. That's a shock on a high school student coming in, you know, right out of high school, being dumped into a military academy.
Right. It is quite a shock. But I had the blessing. First of all, I was really late in the process. This was February of my senior year before it became on my radar. And so that in combination with nominations and quite honestly needed to improve my academic board scores a little bit. So I ended up enlisting and going to the prep school, which I'm, you know, Air Force. And so I did that for a year or just about a year, then was discharged for the Army and entered West Point. So that made West Point, at least my first year there, a lot more digestible. And what I mean was the shock of the military culture was no longer there. I matured another year, both, you know, mentally, physically, and emotionally, understood the military a whole lot better. And so, you know, my biggest challenge was probably academic, but it, you know, and that's the whole kind of balance.
Sure.
You know, as leaders, you know, there are capable aspects of being able to kind of manage competing demands and that place, without a doubt, provides that challenge. And and so you grow and to survive or you don't. And so I was fortunate to be able to do all of them.
So you get out, you're commissioned second lieutenant, right? I mean, you get out of West Point, you're a second lieutenant, you got to do 5 years, you said. So you get assigned to your unit, which 82nd, sir?
No, so my first assignment was, I was commissioned as a field artillery officer.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
And my first assignment was 3 Corps Artillery at Fort Sill. So you go to your basic course, you got to go to a basic branch to kind of understand, you know, the general responsibilities of your branch. Yeah. And then I got assigned to a force comm or forces command operationally. And it's the same organization that, you know, the 82nd, our operational units in CONUS fall under force comm.
Yeah.
But anyway, and I was, you know, a platoon FDO, and ultimately, I spent a little over 3 years in my first assignment and had one deployment to the first Gulf War, Desert Shield, Desert Storm.
Yeah.
Would go back to the advanced course or career course for captains, and then my second assignment was Fort Bragg, the 82nd Airborne Division. Yeah.
So you rise to the ranks. I remember seeing a video, I think it's on your website, where you talk about you got a vacation, you're in Hawaii with your family, and you're trying to enjoy yourself, and a major general calls you up and says, I think you were colonel at the time, or you were captain.
No, I was a light colonel.
So you're a light colonel, lieutenant colonel. Yep. And he calls you up and says, you know, Colonel or Lieutenant Colonel or Greg, whatever, I need you here. And it was Kansas, right? You had to fly back to Kansas.
Yeah. So I just come back from Afghanistan and I'd been selected to command a battalion. They told me the timing of it was what kind of threw me for a loop. I was supposed to stay in Hawaii for about 6 months, but I just got back and then they're asking me to move to Fort Riley. And so I'm like, literally, you know, I just left Afghanistan and now they're sending me to Kansas. And I'm like, oh man. So,
I remember with the 82nd, we went over and what's the 25th ID, I think, is in Hawaii, I think. Yeah. Yeah. And I remember
Tropic Lightning.
Yeah, Tropic Lightning. And I remember doing road marches in Hawaii. you know, these ridiculous 25, 30 mile an hour road marches. Yeah. I never realized, you know, Hawaii, everybody was like, yeah, we're going to go to Hawaii. And yeah, wasn't the Hawaii I was thinking about. It wasn't.
You know, when you're light, your feet are part of your weapon, right?
I'm still hunting for my recruiter, Greg. I remember going to the recruiter years ago and I said, hey, I want to join the Army. And he was like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, well, you know, I want to do something fun. And my ASVAB scores were pretty good. And he said, well, why don't you go airborne? And I was like, oh, cool. Tell me about it. My dad told me a little bit about it. He said, all you do is jump out of planes. You do nothing. You just clean your weapon all day. I was like, okay, well, sign me up. Dumb kid I was.
That's what he told you. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. All you do is clean your weapon all day.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's what he told me. Of course, I, you know, I'm dumb. I'm, you know, young kid and I, you know, hook, line, and sinker. So, yeah. But I, like you, I love the military. I love the time I was in, what I was doing. I told you this before we started. My wife at the time hated it, you know, rapid deployment unit, gone anywhere in the world in 18 hours. She didn't like it. So my reenlistment window came up. I was probably going to stay in. I'm not blaming my ex-wife. I mean, it was time to leave. I had a baby at the time and she just couldn't do it anymore. So again, I was getting ready to go to Vicenza, Italy. I was going to do that if I stayed in, but yeah, everything for a reason, brother, as you know.
Wow. Yeah. Sweet assignment.
So, I you talk a lot about, I'd like to just talk about a little bit about, cause I think it's obviously important. You got injured, you got severely injured. When you're overseas, can you talk about that, sir?
Sure. I'm actually, this May will be the 14th anniversary of that, May 7th of 2007. Mm-hmm. I say ironically, returning from a memorial service for two soldiers in my brigade had been killed 3 days earlier. And so that's when my vehicle was hit by a roadside bomb. I was heading back to my headquarters in a four vehicle patrol and I remember that evening, Pat, because, you know, it's in 07, Iraq Baghdad, Iraq was an extremely violent period. Mm-hmm. I can recall almost every single day, an American was paying with their life. It was just, it was that tough. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't really have a lot of time to kind of process, this kind of sacrifice that, you know, our men and women were making every day. But this was one of those such days that I did slow down enough. Again, we attended a memorial service. These were folks that were from Fort Riley, from my home station, part of my parent brigade that I was from. And so this one stung a little bit more. It bit. I was on my way back to my headquarters and I was, you know, kind of heart was heavy with the sacrifice and wham, that's when my vehicle is hit. You know, the blast blows me out of my vehicle. I'm flying through the air and I hit the ground, coming to a rolling stop on my back on the road. My vehicle keeps going. And, I'm absolutely blessed that, you know, that A, my men found me. First Sergeant Frederick Johnson, my acting battalion command sergeant major, would be the first one to locate me. I was already unconscious. And my medic got the tourniquets on my legs, which, feels like they saved my life. And so just kind of give you a little bit of a perspective of my injuries. I was, that night I would, I went into arrest or would die six times, went through 129 pints of blood. And I guess more significantly, I would tell you that in the month of May of 2007, 131 U.S. service members would pay with their lives. More than 10 times that number were severely wounded. So it was, again, a tough environment and, it was a tough fight.
Yeah. And I know from what I read about your road to recovery, sir, I know part of it was, and this ties into you know, what you were taught and the leadership you were taught in the military. I know you suffered for a long time. You thought that, you know, obviously a debilitating injury like that, I can't imagine. But you thought you could get through the PTSD and the things. I remember hearing a speech from you saying when you got back, you'd be in a car and you'd start seeing these flashes in your mind. And then, you know, it got to a point where you realized you couldn't do it alone anymore. And you had to reach out, right?
Yes. And, you know, I didn't recover alone. And they're all, you know, it's, I won't say it's funny, but, you know, people see those of us that, you know, and oftentimes receive physical wounds, and, you know, the physical wounds heal much more quickly than the than the emotional and the mental wounds. I have to give my wife credit for talking to me this way, but, you know, I've heard her talk to many families about, you know, we move, you know, if you move, they PCS you and you get a professional that moves you from one place to the next. Sure. And sometimes mentally, emotionally, spiritually, we're in a place and we need to get to another place. And guess what? You need a professional to help you do that. And I thought I could do that myself, but I couldn't. And, you know, to keep my family together, I recognized that I needed to get a professional, and I not only got a professional, but, you know, my entire family did the same thing so we could get from a place that we needed to be. And it takes strength. I said, it's the right thing to do. And we absolutely are glad we did it.
Yeah. We're glad too, sir. And you have to want it. You know that. I mean, you have to want to get better. I mean, I think so many people, I was one of those people, you know, I did law enforcement for a long time and suffered from obviously, I mean, nothing compared to you, sir, but I mean, a lot of, you know, death and trauma, obviously, you know, and it gets you, we're not designed to see that as humans. We're not designed to see trauma and death, and combat and law enforcement. And I don't care how tough people think they are, you know, it's going to affect you at some point, and it's going to bleed, and it's going to permeate every aspect of your life.
I agree 100%. And it's because those are unnatural things. Yeah. I mean, you think about it, you know, we're taught to respect and preserve life. And in some cases, we're asked to take it. And that's counterintuitive. It's justified as right as it may be. It's still a life. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, you know, I tell everyone, when I saw an enemy dead, it was the same feeling as seeing a friendly person. It's a, you know, my thought is this a human being? That was a human life. Yeah. You know, that was somebody that was breathing 6 hours ago and didn't think they were going to be dead, you know? And
Well, I think if you start getting to the point where it's not affecting you, sir, I mean, then that's that there's some serious problems right there. When you start just looking at somebody as just piece of meat or something like that, or whatever you want to call it, maybe that's too bad what I just said, but you know what I mean? It's just, I mean, they're human beings, you know? I mean, I remember in
absolutely.
Watching, you know, I don't know why I'm thinking about it, but it made me think of like Band, or maybe it was Saving Private Ryan or Band of Brothers, where they're in the Battle of Bastogne, you know, the 101st. And, you know, it's Christmas Eve.
Yes.
And they start hearing the Germans, you know, the enemy start singing, you know, Silent Night or something. And, you know, it put a human aspect on it. You know, they might be enemies and they're trying to kill each other, but they're human beings too. You know, they're human beings doing what they think is right. We're doing what we thinking is right. You know what I mean?
Right. And maybe what they're told to do. And so it's, you know, we sometimes color the enemy in a different, to sort of make it easy to process. You know, we use Japs, we use Nazis, we use these inanimate to kind of break the connection that there's a human being that's fighting.
Yeah. And God bless the brave men and women who are still overseas. I mean, that's the thing that kind of frustrates me sometimes with, we don't hear about still the many brave men and women who are overseas fighting in different theaters. And you mentioned, you know, when you were overseas, you know, I mean, people don't understand that the operational tempo of certain units, your unit and other units, I mean, it's go, go, go. You don't have time, a lot of time, to stop and decompress, to figure out what's going on and to mourn, like you were saying, sir. I mean, it's the operational tempo, you know, it's go, 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 go. You know that. And a lot of people don't understand that stuff.
Well, Pat, it's interesting you mentioned that, because, you know, and look, I'm not law enforcement, but I'll just throw this as an observation. You know that in when we were in the 82nd, it was sort of third. And so you were at the tip of the spear, mm-hmm. then you went to support, and then you were preparing. And it was this cycle of preparedness, you know, DRF-1 to DRF-9, right? And so it's first of all, it's a recognition that you can't stay, you know, locked in the, no. you know, in the ready stance permanently. And I think that that's one of the challenges our law enforcement, law enforcement doesn't have the density that the military has. And so, you know, when does law enforcement truly get a break? Do they get refreshed on training? Are they in a support versus on the tip of the spear? And so some of those things ultimately, you know, rubber bands pop you can get bad behavior. You can get behavior that's not consistent with the profession because, you know, the rubber band broke.
Yeah. And you make a great point, Greg, about, you know, yeah, I mean, that heightened awareness, that situational awareness that officers and military units too, certain military units, they're always at that heightened state. The firefighters really have the you know, the best, you know, because they go on a call and then they get chance to decompress, come back. Whereas law enforcement, that's just the nature of the job. Right. I mean, you're always at that constant heightened state of awareness. I remember when I retired, and I still do it some degree, not as much as I used to. You know, my wife and I would go out to dinner and I'd be like, have to situate myself where I could see the doors or see people's hands.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's right.
It's just that situational awareness.
You don't want your back to the door.
No, I don't want my back to the door. But, you know, gradually over time, you know, I've kind of decompressed a lot more because I've been out of it for a while now. And yeah, it's just decompressing. But yeah, you're right. You can't maintain that. That's the reason why, you know, people who are, you know, in the Secret Service, for example, they can't be in those roles for that long, maybe 2 or 3 years, but they have to get cycled out because they can't be at that situational awareness, that heightened level of awareness the entire time.
Absolutely.
Now, I mentioned before we started, sir, I mentioned seeing you at NCLS, which is a leadership conference for listeners out there who don't know what we're talking about. Every year, the Air Force Academy, you know, hosts like a very, very popular, you know, leadership conference here in the Colorado Springs area. That's where the academy is. And Colonel Gatson was there 1 year, and he talked about leadership. And I know you're passionate about it, sir. You know, we talked a little bit about it before, and I know it's cliche, but I really do think that there's a leadership void out there. I mentioned before we started, I think, you know, some people have rank or, you know, whether it's law enforcement or the military. And I remember learning from a very early age in my law enforcement career, as well as my military career, just because you have rank doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a leader. I knew as I went up through the ranks in law enforcement, every time I got promoted, I had to prove myself again, and I had to gain the trust of my troops, law enforcement. Can you talk a lot about leadership? Because I know you're passionate about it.
So I felt as a leader, the lead of an organization, first of all, that I am working for my subordinates. I'm working for my organization. And it's, you know, at different levels and in different ways, it's my responsibility to make sure that we understand the mission and that we're prepared to execute. In fact, that my men and women and my people are prepared to be successful. I think, and so for that perspective, it's first of all, their respect is earned, not to be given. It's not expected. And every day as a leader, I had to earn their respect. I had to earn their respect every day. They gain their trust, and And so you give respect, you get respect, and just remain humble, remain empathetic, and understand that it's not about you. Too many people feel that that their title, their position is, that's what it's about. And actually it's about the success of the organization. And mm-hmm. and everything is ultimately a team. You might be the leader of the team, but it's not about you.
Yeah.
And so that's what keeps me humble. That's what keeps me energized. That's what keeps me excited about seeing them be successful.
Yeah. I always said too, and I love what you said about humility, because I think the best leaders I ever worked for in the military or in law enforcement, I spend most of my time in law enforcement and, you know, in a uniform. I tell people I spent most of my adult life in a uniform. Some of it was in the military, but a lot of it was in law enforcement. And some of the best leaders that I've seen, Greg, were the humble ones, the ones that said, look, I don't know the answer, but I'll get yeah. back to you. I'll find out and I'll get it to you. Instead of the ones that try to BS their way through it. And you know, absolutely. As well as I do, troops yeah, will see right that's through right. that. Right. They'll see right you through don't that.
Have to, yeah, you don't have to be the smartest one. You know, I used to tell my lieutenants, they said, you know, when I was old, I said, you know, I'm going to ask you a question sometimes. And I don't expect you to know the answer. I don't expect you to even tell me the answer. I expect you to go find it.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, there's always something that's, and I'm like, you're wrong. You're going to be wrong if you answer, because it's not you're not going to have the answer.
Yeah it's a test. I never wanted to be the smartest guy in the room. I used to, you know, when I was in charge on patrol, and I would have people say, you know, well, you're in charge. Well, I know I'm in charge. You don't have to remind me I'm in charge. I know the buck stops with me a lot of times. But I want your perspective. That's right. Because I believe if you surround right. yourself with people that are smart, maybe smarter than you, that's how you're going to grow as a leader.
And so absolutely. And so my philosophy were these three words: trust, empower, and hold accountable. Mm-hmm. And so you trust your subordinates, you empower them. And so you got to give them the confidence of solving it. And I think a lot of folks get in trouble when they believe they're empowering, but the minute you say, well, Pat, I would have done it this way. Mm-hmm. You've now unempowered them because they're now trying to solve a problem the way they think is going to make you happy. You know, when you're a leader, sometimes you got to live with their, you know, that's empowerment. And so mm-hmm. again, humble yourself that there can be another way and people can, and still be successful. So
why do you think that's, you've been around, Greg? I mean, why do you think that's so difficult for some people, not every leader out there?
Well, it's because I think a lot of times people draw the wrong conclusion about being successful. And the leaders that really kind of, I say, scared me kind of growing up through the ranks are the ones that felt like they were the reason for their success and not mm-hmm. their people. And they continue to do that as they go up the ranks. And guess what? The higher up they go, the more and more people are miserable because they're trying to control everything. They're doing just the opposite of trusting and empowering.
Mm-hmm. I do believe in karma. I think all that stuff comes back.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
So
well, Pat, I was going to say, you know, the easy part for me was I recognized that I wasn't smart enough and talented enough to do all the work. So I was doing that from the very beginning.
But see, you were humble enough and you knew yourself, which I think it's another good aspect of leadership. You tell me if I'm right, Greg, is you have to know thyself.
Self-awareness.
Self-awareness. Yeah. Know what your strengths and weaknesses are. Look, just because I have a bar or a star doesn't necessarily mean the clouds part and I know everything. You know, I know Amen. My limitations, and I know that, okay, I'm not good at this, but I'm going to go to Greg if because he's the expert. He's a lot more knowledgeable than I am in this, you know, he's a subject matter expert. But I think a lot of leaders, you know, we were talking about the current environment, you know, with, and again, I don't want to get all political, but I mean, the current environment we're in, and I'm talking about all the levels of government. And there just seems like there's a lack of leadership, not with everybody, but the current right. environment we're in, I mean, it just seems like there's absolutely no leadership. When you turn on the TV, again, it's not an indictment on everybody out there, you know, that are in certain right. roles, but it sure seems like there's a leadership void out there.
Right. I'm with you 100%.
So what advice, sir, would you give, you know, a leader out there? And first of all, I should have prefaced by saying, I don't think you have to have rank to be a leader. Some of the best people I ever worked with didn't have any stripes, weren't, you know, the anointed leader. They didn't have formal rank. And I really right. do think that you don't have to have rank or a title to be a leader. But what advice yeah. would you give people out there, sir, to become better leaders?
Well, you know, so I think we touched on a little bit, but first of all, I mean, you've got to be, you have to be technically competent. I mean, you mm-hmm. have to understand what you're doing and have some basis of professional knowledge. I mean, that's your technical foundation. And then I say the intangibles are a person of character and integrity. You know, I just came back from West Point last week, and those are the things that I tell young leaders, you can't give away. When you give those things away, they're so hard to get back. Now, it doesn't mean you can't make a mistake, but your word is your bond. Mm-hmm. And you, as you said, there's nothing wrong with saying, I don't know the answer, sir or ma'am. Let me go find out. Let me research it. Let me get with my people. I don't want to give you. And so that, you know, that's humility. And so all those things, you know, I call this the big old fur ball. It's got to rotate, and you got to be able to pull bits and pieces of it at different times. But the things that, again, are not negotiable are your integrity, your character. I think humility and self-awareness and empathy, the higher up you go, the more important those things become, because you know, when you're at where the rubber meets the road, you kind of have the facts and you see everything. The further away you go, you know, it becomes much more instinct. You're going to have to be able to visualize, and mm-hmm. and you're going to have to process information. And it's your experience, hopefully, that you got when you were where the rubber meets the road, that is able to allow you to fill in the blanks when you're much further away from the, yeah. the action or from the yeah. problem.
And I love it. And the higher, I mean, and the other thing I observed, and you know this, is the higher you go up, and when you have that official, people are watching you, your troops are watching you. And like, yep. you have to set yeah. the example. And I like what you said about it's okay to make mistakes. We're all human. We make mistakes, but obviously don't keep making the mistakes, you know, and learn from your failures. Yeah. And I love what you
learn
said.
From
I think,
them.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, and you, I like what you said. I know I heard you speak before on a different, at a different date where you said circumstances don't define us. So, you know, just because you might've messed up or you made mistakes in your past doesn't mean that that's your future. You can't overcome that.
Right. Right. And it's our character. That's, yep. you know, that is what, you know, that's what gets us through the tough times. That's what, you know, that's, you know, do you, and again, you know, you sometimes you see people get in trouble because they're worried about themselves. You know, they impugn their integrity, or they do something because they think it's about them. Mm-hmm. And if they, you know, you just remember, it's not about me. You know, the saying, you know, bad news doesn't get better with time. Just, you know, just get it out.
You know? Yeah, you're right. Well, I got to ask you, for the viewers out there and the listeners out there, I got to ask you about Battleship, brother. Hell of a movie. Okay. How did that come about? Because you played you in that movie.
Well, no, I didn't. I know you. It's easy to draw that conclusion. And what I'll say this is, look, I understood the character.
Yeah, yeah.
I understood.
I should have said that better. Yeah, you character. Understood the character. Yeah.
I would like to say that character that I tried to portray was a compilation of all the men and women that were recovering mm-hmm. at Walter Reed when I was there.
Yeah.
I mean, that is really where I, was able to bring in a dynamic of understanding to that character from just interacting with the men and women that made tremendous sacrifices. But how it came about was, I think you're probably familiar with my my interacting with the New York Giants.
Yes.
And their run to the Super Bowl in 07, 08 season. And, you know, it was simply, the best way to simply state it is that Peter Berg was a New Yorker and a New York Giants fan, and his dad is a former Marine. And so by that admiration for the military and being a New York Giants fan was what inspired him to ask me to act.
Yeah.
Greg Gatson had never played a tree in a school play, much less acted before. I was still on active duty and took it on.
And that was
so
awesome.
All the credit goes to those guys because they got me through it.
Yeah, but you did an amazing job in that.
Thank you.
And I remember the female actress was kept pushing you, and you were kind of, your character was kind of bitter, and you were like, screw this crap, I ain't doing this.
Right,
and
right.
I don't want to give away the movie, and you know, and it's been out there for a while, but if you haven't seen Battleship, you got to see Greg Gatson in that movie. He's tremendous in that movie. Some pretty kick-ass fight scenes in that movie too, between I think you and a big huge alien, I think.
Yeah.
Well, brother, we're wrapping it up now. I mean, where can people find you, Greg? If they want to learn more about Greg Gatson, where can they find you, sir?
Well, look, I don't have a specific website, nothing of my own. I'm that's my last frontier that I'm trying to avoid having. But I mean, if you Google Gregory Gatson or Colonel Gregory Gatson, there'll be plenty of links that pop up. You can find me on YouTube videos, NFL films. If you put my name in a speaker's bureau, you can find me that way. So generally not too hard to find. You found me too, Pat. So, you know, LinkedIn or that's another place of finding me. So I'm not ghosting, but so.
Well, I appreciate you being here. You mentioned the New York Giants. I think you have a little ring, don't you? You have a little Super Bowl ring, don't you?
Yeah, I actually have two.
You got two Super Bowl rings.
Super Bowl 42 and Super Bowl 46. Yeah. So, you know, Pat, a little irony, you know, this young man, young high schooler wanting to grow up and be a professional football player and be a champion.
Yeah.
And you know what? I didn't play professionally, but I did end up being a champion in a lot of ways. And
I was going to say, brother.
So thank you.
You are a champion. And thank you for your service, sir. Decorated service for this great country. Much success to you in your future, sir. If you ever need anything, you know where to find me. And again, have a great day. And thank you for coming on the show, sir.
You bet, Pat. And again, great to be on your show. I appreciate what you're doing. I appreciate your service and your continued service in this forum. So thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.